Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. We're in Montgomery for the Alabama Republican Party event. The dinner tonight, headlined by South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. And then tomorrow, the meeting. We'll give you the what's important, or what I deem to be important, wrap-up on Monday. Speaking of Monday, Dell Jackson joins us for some reason. I still don't know why, but he'll be with us in some guests to be named later. As always, twitter.com/Jeff_Poor. I post a guest list sometime at 8 o'clock hour, and you'll know who's coming up on the program. Speaking of guys on our program, it is Friday. It's time for our returning champion. He hails from Josephine, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to be with you here live in beautiful downtown Montgomery.
Are you really glad to be here? Or
Well, if you look hard, you can see the river, so I'm close enough to some water, so that makes me happy.
You do have to turn your head and look down the street, but you can see the Alabama River for sure. Let's kick it off here. We had one of your colleagues on, Senator Chambliss, on earlier. Really discussion about, and inflation, and in that, all these expenditures, all these big items, big purchases the state has had, prisons, all this road construction coming out of Rebuild Alabama. Well, inflation is going to make the prices go up, and you have to, looking down the field, is that something you guys are talking about, that now things are more expensive? Well, it's going to cost more for the state.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't have to go to the Chicago School of Economics to figure out what's happening here. We are driving our own costs up because of the spending that we are doing as a state on these different projects. The demand is high. Because there is so much federal money floating around at the municipal level, at the county level, and at the state level for road improvements and other infrastructure improvements up to and including prisons. You're going to see the same thing with broadband hardware, because all across the country, states and local governments are investing in broadband infrastructure. That just means the demand for those products are high, and we're still coming out of supply chain issues, which just makes demand that much higher. So you see that in everything from, you know, water and sewer projects and power generation and distribution projects. I mean, there's a transformer shortage. We're seeing all of that, which just makes costs go up.
That transformer shortage in Baldwin County, that's a problem, isn't it?
It is. You know, you hear me say it all the time, fastest growing county in the state. And since the 2020 census, almost half of all of the state's growth occurred in one county, and that's Baldwin. So we're trying to hook folks up to power and cannot find the transformers to do it. It's becoming a serious issue.
Well, and it's all these supply chain disruptions. So we typically think about inflation, it's devaluation of the dollar or whatnot, but it's also just demand is forcing those costs up. So it seems like that could be precarious here, that maybe you got to dial some of it back or delay it.
Well, and you're going to have to pay attention to budgets as well, right? So you've got, as you point out, devaluation of the dollar. That's inflation. Then you see the demand side of things, where folks are willing to pay more for something that's really scarce and hard to get. And then, of course, you see the other part of that, which is people looking at how much something is costing now, and they're worried that it will increase in price in the near future if they are even able to get it. So they will pay more for it now than they otherwise would, because they're scared they won't be able to get it at that price or even a higher price later on. So that's driving inflation.
It's like a hoarding thing, kind of like the COVID and the toilet paper and the paper towels, right? It's not necessarily rational, but it is.
You're exactly right, and that's exactly what's going on, and it's going to impact budgets. We see state budgets, both in the ETF and the general fund budget, that are higher than they've ever been before, and that's all well and good, but the purchasing power of the dollar in those budgets is not what it was before, and we're going to see I hope we don't see problems. I hope we have built that into the budget.
Well, what do you think? I was listening to Young Boozer on Capital Journal last week. Talk about how much money's in the bank account for the state right now. And I know that you got limits on the ARPA money, that they're not going to let it. They're just not going to let it, let you sit on it forever. But he's making money right now. That it's in these short-term investments, and it's accumulating there. And when interest rates go up, well, then that's a net positive for the state. The state's doing like $100 million or something, you know, off of ARPA money on a yearly, on an annualized basis. Does it behoove the legislature to back off and maybe say, well, now's not the time to go head deep into all these purchases, let the market cool off, and then just kind of push it to as long as you can?
Well, there's an upside to inflation when you have a bunch of capital sitting idly by, right? You can lend it out, you can invest it, and that's what the state treasurer is talking about, is trying to take the cash that's on hand and making sure that it's invested wisely so that it yields interest and yields dividends back to the state. That's his job. That's exactly what he should be doing. You point out correctly, the ARPA money's got to be spent by 2026. These are capital expenditures. They're capital projects. They're hard to get up and going in a very short period of time. And that is a short time frame for government to design, execute, and complete a project of any size. So those have got to get going. And then the other things, I think we've got to press on. You know, prisons is another, you know, $800-900 million. We got to move on those right now. We've got other outside influences that are pushing us on that. So I don't think the state can sit by and wait until inflation moderates. I think we just gotta gut it out and keep moving.
We'll talk about prisons with Senator Chambliss, though. There's going to be problems with the construction of that because number one, like we were talking about, the inflation is driving up cost. And then I guess just material shortages, right? I mean, that's widespread. It's everywhere. Does the DOJ, how many times does the DOJ say, hey, we had COVID. Can you give us a little time here? Well, we got inflation. Can you give us a little time here? Is that even a concern that this pushing this back is going to raise the ire of the DOJ in a federal court?
So we've got a number of different factors that are really pushing us on prisons right now. You saw the general fund committees meet yesterday to talk about hiring and staffing issues, 540-something unfilled positions at the Department of Corrections. Mary Sell had a good story about that. And then you correctly point out the supply chain issues that we're going to run into with prison construction. But to answer your question directly, I think that the Department of Justice, as long as they see us heading in the right direction, as long as they see us making the capital investment, as long as they see that the legislature has funded these positions year over year that have remained unfilled, unfortunately, because of all these other extraneous outside influences, that the DOJ is going to say, look, they're taking us seriously. We're going in the right direction, and probably give us some leeway and some time to accomplish those goals. Short of that, I don't think they want to come in and take over Alabama's prison system. They just want us to do a better job with it. And we, as the legislature, have certainly funded both of those goals.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, I want to give you another bite at this apple because you spoke pretty definitively on it the first time I asked. But the Medicaid expansion discussion won't go away. And I mean, I know that maybe the budgets are not going to be as rosy now because of the economic pressures, but there still does seem to me to be a push to do this. And Senator Chambliss said no way, he doesn't think it could happen. But it hasn't made this discussion go away. Whenever I see these guys and these, you know, the BCA types or whoever, so talking about healthcare, you're like, what could they possibly mean? And we got to do something about healthcare. How serious do you think a Medicaid expansion effort will be this coming quadrennium?
It is absolutely not happening on my watch. That is a horrible idea for the state, and not just from the cost standpoint, because the federal government is going to leave us in the lurch on that. I mean, they will say, oh, we're going to fund 90% of it or 100% of it, and then we'll dial it back to 70. They're going to leave us in the lurch, and Alabama will be saddled with a huge entitlement program that we can't afford, that we can ill afford. And then, again, there are the societal issues that come along with that. If you disincentivize work, if you disincentivize grown people being responsible, having a job and providing their own health insurance by giving it to them for free, they won't go to work. And we've seen that all too often. Half of all the children born in the state of Alabama are born into Medicaid through our CHIPS program right now. And that means we're giving mothers and children great prenatal care, and children first year or so, they're getting great care, and that's all well and good. But if you have
half of the population that's being born is being born on the government dole. That's backwards. We cannot go further than that. We probably shouldn't have gone as far as we have. And I'm completely unwilling, and I'm glad my colleague Senator Chambliss is on that on the same side there. I just think it's a bad, bad public policy decision.
Half boarded Medicaid. That's is there any way to dial that back or try to? I mean, is it? I guess it's kind of a discussion about education, everything. It seems societal and that you got to, is there necessarily a government solution to what's going on in the culture? I don't think there is.
I don't know that there's a government solution to what's going on, but the government can certainly make it worse. And if we continue to provide free programs and we continue to provide disincentives to work, whether it's through welfare issues or the loosening of unemployment or other things that make it possible to live in this state without being a productive member of society, then we're going in the wrong direction. And as conservatives, we need to stop and say enough is enough. Enough government is enough. Sure, you want to help somebody that's down on their luck. Sure, you want to make sure women and children get good health care. But good gracious, there's got to be a motivation for dad to get up and go to work. There's got to be a motivation for mom to get up and go to work. We cannot continue to have the employment participation rate as low as it is right now. It's really causing harm, irreparable harm to our economy and our society.
Well, is there something you could do on the other side? So whenever I have these discussions with my friends on the left, Josh Moon, the guys like, they're like, well, look at all these rural hospitals going away. Doug Jones, or you need Medicaid expansion to preserve these health care in these rural areas. And it kind of occurs, as Del Mar said, well, what they're doing is they're conflating rural health care with rural hospitals. We could do something maybe about facilities where you know, health care is – a little different, but is looking at this problem, is there something else that isn't Medicaid expansion that maybe the state could do?
It really is the market, and healthcare delivery in Alabama needs to continue to evolve just like every other industry in the state of Alabama does. We've got to look at rural healthcare and the population bases that are in our rural communities and realize that the delivery method is old school. It needs to be updated. We need to have freestanding emergency room clinics in rural areas. We need to make sure that we are treating folks quickly on site. But if they need in-depth health care, they need to get to a metropolitan area with the trauma centers, with the specialization in those urban centers. We don't need those types of facilities and can't afford those types of facilities in rural Alabama where there's not the population to support it. That's just math. And every time we try to provide those facilities in rural Alabama, we end up losing money and then eventually losing the hospital. And it's just a backwards outdated way of thinking.
Well, those standalone emergency facilities, that seems to be probably what you need more of in these places. You know, everybody talks, I guess the Black Belt is kind of where this is the biggest problem. It's just you have to drive an hour to go somewhere in some of those places. And it maybe that's helicopter pad or, you know, and a place for ambulances to pull up. And that's the way to go. That's like the next thing. Or we're doing sewer water infrastructure for those guys, maybe that's the next step, right?
Well, and I think that's a reasonable delivery method. That along with some telehealth and other things of that nature. Look, if you have an emergent situation, let's get that dealt with and let's still get that dealt with quickly. But then let's bandage you up and let you get you to the, you know, where the big doctors are.
Well, then there's like this, Senator. Really, Governor Bentley, who's adopted this Medicaid expansion philosophy here in the last few years, but I didn't know this. Coosa County doesn't have any doctors. That's a big county each way. I mean, I know it's kind of off the beaten path. Coosa County is one of these places you have to go to. You don't really go through. But that just there should be something there, right? Just even if it's just a standalone kind of thing.
Well, I think you need to look at, you know, again, population areas. And while there may not be a physician in Coosa County that lives or has an office in Coosa County, is there one just adjacent in the next metropolitan area over? And is that sufficient? I'm not going to, you know, contest that claim. I don't know the facts on it. But, you know,
do we need to say there needs to be a facility in every county? Maybe, maybe not. It's just a matter of how far it is to get somebody to get to take care of.
Well, there can't be that many places like that, though.
No, I think that's clearly the exception rather than the rule. We do need to have good primary care in each county, that's for sure. And I think that that if we could do that along with some telemedicine and some freestanding emergency rooms, then we would be much more effective in providing healthcare in those areas than we are trying to keep these legacy hospitals with these hospital beds and all the regulation that goes along with them open. They're too expensive and all too often ineffective.
Last question we'll get you out of here on this. The ADEM, Seward Water, all these projects from ARPA that they're going to administer, and everywhere's got needs, but you're very pointed in saying, don't forget about Baldwin County.
Yeah, we had the Joint Oversight Committee on the ARPA funds yesterday. I'm proud to sit on that committee, and I was probably a little rough on the ADEM director about the allocation of ARPA funds in the state. No project in Baldwin County has been funded so far, despite $160 million or so that's been asked for out of that ARPA money. Look, being from Baldwin County now, you understand we have water and sewer infrastructure problems.
Yes.
You know, no question about it. We have sewer leaks going to the bay. We have everything else. The legislature wisely in the ARPA funding really divided the money into three pots, a very small pot to deal with some black belt issues where they had some really acute sewage problems, and then about $125 million to deal with financial need-based sewer infrastructure, water and sewer infrastructure. Then it left another pot of money, about $100 million or so, where grants are going to be given to municipalities and utilities, and the expectation is that there are matching funds to go along with that, right, to stretch out, if you will, the value of that $100 million. Well, all of the grants that have been submitted in Baldwin County, which is a fairly affluent place, have significant matches associated with them. That makes that money go further, and that's exactly what the legislature intended. Unfortunately, ADEM heretofore has not seen its way to grant any of those projects to any Baldwin County folks, and that's going to be a problem moving forward when we start allocating the second tranche of this $1.1 billion. And I wanted to make sure that my friends at ADEM understood that I expected that Senator Albritton and the general fund chairman who represents the balance of Baldwin County expected that Baldwin County start to receive some of those dollars real soon if we're going to continue down this path.
Very diplomatic way of putting it. Well, Senator, we got to leave it there. You've been very kind to stop by this morning, but we will catch up again next week.
Glad to be here with you in person.
All right, guys, we got to get one more break in. We'll wrap it all up on the other side. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Poets tell how Bon Jovi fell and left his living in a cheap hotel. The desert's quiet, Cleveland's cold.